Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
Now it's time for Inside the Clubhouse, a show dedicated to the Chicago baseball fan, featuring the best Chicago baseball conversation, as well as the big MLB topics, along with the biggest names, greatest guests, and listener interaction, starring Score baseball insider Bruce Levine, and half of Chicago's number one sports morning show, David Haw, on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
And good morning, everybody. Welcome to Inside the Clubhouse. Great to have you along for 2 hours of baseball talk here from 9 to 11 on your Saturday morning. Alongside Bruce Levine, I'm Mike Esposito in for David Haw today. And Bruce, good morning. And not a lot of offense at all last night on the South Side.
Mike, if I would have told you 30 runs were being scored on the South Side before the game yesterday, you would have continued to think what you've thought for many years, that I'm crazy. And it was a wild night with a full house on the South Side. And the idea that the White Sox continue to move toward clinching a position in the playoffs, and the Cubs continue to find out who will help them moving forward in their retooling of 2022 and beyond, Mike.
Absolutely. We will talk about everything crosstown today here on the show. Bruce and I are pleased to welcome Boog Shambi and Jason Benetti, both of your TV broadcasters for each of your teams. White Sox, Cubs will be joining us during the show here today. And plenty of good last night for the White Sox, Bruce, and certainly offensively, lots of good. But let's actually start with the bad, because really, there was only one guy who pitched well last night, and that's Ronaldo Lopez, and we'll get to him. But the guy who started the game for the White Sox and has to be one of their major areas of concern as we head into September here is Dallas Keuchel, who's been roughed up lately.
The last 10 starts, ERA over 7, not good. Dallas is a proud, important pitcher for the Chicago White Sox, Mike, but the defense and defensive shifting, along with three or four very poor pitches, had him ending up 6 runs down mm-hmm. before he knew it, and out by the second batter of the second inning, were in a real wonky situation. It was Tony La Russa coming out with an 0-1 count on Patrick Wisdom to take him out in the second inning. It was just, a nightmare for Keuchel. Mike, who's always a stand-up guy, but chose not to talk after that game yesterday. We were told by White Sox media relations that he will talk today before the game. You can understand emotionally. This was his worst start in his history, Mike. Mm-hmm. Earliest he's ever come out of a game as a starter. So you can imagine the tension was high for him on many different levels. Certainly not wanting to talk about it, not wanting to call out teammates, and not facing the fact that this has been a really bad stretch for him.
Right, and if you were late settling into the game last night, Keuchel gives up 6 in the first, 5 of them earned on 7 hits, and as Bruce mentioned, not all his fault, but certainly if you were a little late getting your TV and you had the Cubs 6-0 after half of an inning, as Bruce said, you would have thought we were crazy here. But the Sox then, one in the bottom of the first, and then an 8 spot in the third, which really kind of vaulted them back in there. And we haven't even mentioned, and we will now, the return of Yasmani Grandal, and really talk about returning with a bang, huh, Bruce?
Yeah, 8 RBIs, 2 home runs and a double, 2 3-run homers. It was, just another crazy offensive night and a nightmare for pitchers, including Cubs starter Keegan Thompson, who just from the beginning, just didn't have much out there. Normally, Mike, he's a 95 to 97 mile an hour pitcher. He was constantly sitting at 92, 93. He really didn't have good stuff last night. And it was just something that the White Sox certainly capitalized on rather quickly from the second and into the third inning. So a tremendous night for fans out there to watch offense, if that's what you like, because you saw plenty of it. And then, as you mentioned, Mike, moving toward Lopez and five perfect innings, which set the White Sox up to be able to hold off the Cubs, who started in a terrific way off. Getting their offense to take over the rest of that game. It was a bizarre game. It was a rough situation all the way around for pitching, but Lopez certainly has put himself in the spotlight as an important pitcher for the Chicago White Sox in 2021. And going back to spring training when he was fighting Carlos Rodon for the fifth spot, if you remember, most of the spring and lost out, this is a much different pitcher now than what we saw before. And he, honestly, if you look at his numbers in minor leagues where he's been here, it hasn't been impressive. But he talked a little bit about, you know, finding it when he's come back here, and he's been an important guy for them.
Yeah, I mean, he was their best starter a few years back. He lost his way a little bit, and you mentioned even in the minors this year, not the sharpest, but five perfect innings in a pinch last night in relief of Keuchel. Huge going forward, certainly huge for last night and picking up the win. And let's go to tape for a second here, Bruce, because Rick Hahn talked before the game, and he talked about everything right now as we sit here on August 28th. Everything that the Sox are doing right now is about that postseason.
Look, again, for the next month, the focus is going to be on winning the division, getting everyone healthy, and getting everyone in the best position to succeed for October. In terms of the preparation, when Tony originally referenced wanting to start going into a somewhat of a postseason process in terms of prepare for opponents, I was interested to see, you know, how that was exactly going to change. And because if, quite frankly, over the previous several months, it had been a pretty darn good process as well. But he was right. And the team responded, and the amount of work that went into preparing for each of the opponents did ramp up some. And I think, like I said a couple times now, is going to serve us well here over the coming months.
So, Bruce, as you look ahead, and it's not really that far, I mean, the lineup, hey, it looks a heck of a lot better with Grandal, Luis Robert, and Eloy Jimenez, who've also recently come back from injuries. Look at that. I mean, that lineup, that looks like the lineup they had intended all along. Obviously, the injuries derailed it. But you look at starting pitching, you look at pitching in general for the postseason, and Keuchel, a guy you signed to a big free agent deal to kind of be one of those guys, is now maybe on the outside looking into any postseason starts.
They have a lot of pleasant problems to deal with, including getting their bullpen into a situation where it looks like the dominant group of guys that they have on paper. I mean, that has been a bizarre part of the 2021 White Sox, Mike. You have these tremendous names with tremendous resumes out there, and you have had just maybe some consistency, but not exactly what people expected of what many people in baseball believe to be the most dominant group of names in the game in a bullpen. And, finding the right area and the right consistency for Keuchel is probably going to Kimbrel is probably going to be the name of the game going down to the end here. I mean, you have Tapura, you have Bummer, you have Marshall on the mend coming back. You have Hendricks, who has blown six or seven saves, but has looked terrific at most of the time of the year. So you have you have a lot of getting people used to. And you know, when you get to the playoffs, you're not going to have five starters. You're going to have three, maybe four.
Right.
And deciding and paring that down, that's going to be the charge of the team. But in reality, Mike, these are great problems to have, aren't they?
Great problems to have, and I did not mention yet, but Kimbrel. So Kimbrel comes in with the game 17-10, pitches the ninth, but another shaky one, right? He gives up three earned, the home run from Happ, two hits, a walk. He did strike out two batters, but after it looks like he may have found himself, and then, listen, and I said it off the top, nobody but Lopez pitched well last night on either team. But Kimbrel gave up three runs in his one frame, and he is definitely still searching as he's made his way to the South Side. Still, he hasn't found that first half magic that he had with the Cubs.
Mike, I don't care what anyone tells you. From my experience, and take it for what it's worth, some people, you know, do, some people don't. I get it. But from my experience, when you bring in a dominant closer from somewhere else and try to find the proper role for him, the mentality changes for the pitcher. The stuff doesn't change, but the way that he goes about it, the adrenaline that he brings, that is an eighth inning compared to a ninth inning, it's different. I'm sorry. I mean, right. It just is. And Kimbrel's the same quality pitcher he was, blowing away the National League, being without question the best pitcher in the National League as far as closing goes, by far, all year long. Actually, from last September on, he was lights out. I mean, the guy was just terrific. And people will say, well, he wasn't closing all last September, and that's true. He was finding his mechanics again. He was starting to be able to command the breaking ball, therefore people not sitting on the fastball, and able to use the fastball out of the zone to get a lot of swings and misses. So he was back to being the dominant pitcher in baseball that he was when the Cubs signed him and imagined him being that back in 2019. But going in that eighth inning and just not being the man, I don't care what people tell you. It's different. And he has had some success lately, and why not? He's a terrific pitcher. But I'm telling you, finding that role, the proper role for him, is one of the biggest situations for the Chicago White Sox moving into the playoffs. And I'm not telling you that's a bad situation. It's a great situation the White Sox are in. They just have to find that comfortability level for him to be successful there most of the time.
Right, and let's face it, right? They're 10 games up in their division. They will win the Central. It's just a question of when. But they have all this time, and you heard the cut we played from Rick Hahn. Get ready for the playoffs, not just physically, mentally, slotting guys in the bullpen, things like that. And I think the nice thing that the White Sox have working for them, and La Russa has certainly been, he's taken his share of criticism for certain things throughout the course of this season. But one thing, historically, he's a Hall of Fame manager, that he's been good at as a manager is use of the bullpen and really trying to find Kimbrel's spot there. I think you would hope would be something that he would be able to do before the end of the season here.
Not only that, but the communication level. You know, you saw, you know, when he had to come out a few outings ago and the discord between him and La Russa about, you're taking me out after I just struck somebody out. You're not letting me finish the inning here. That was, you know, something that Tony had to deal with off of the field. That's something that Kimbrel didn't feel respected for at that particular point in time. So there's a sensitivity issue about dealing with these great players like Kimbrel as well. That's not the easiest thing to manage. And, you know, as a manager, and La Russa, as you pointed out, Mike, you know, 34 years, a Hall of Fame manager. The Hall of Fame doesn't help you out when you have these situations that come up. The only thing that helps you out is your experience as to how you've dealt with things like this in the past, and when it's not right, how to make it right moving forward. And that is tremendous communication by La Russa and his coaches, and sitting down and facing these guys eye to eye and face to face about situations that come up that don't satisfy everyone, Mike. You know, we live in an era right now where people want things explained to them five different ways before they understand what it is. Sometimes in baseball and in sports, you're not going to have time to do that until after the fact. And you're going to have to be the master baseball person and the master psychiatrist or psychologist to be able to help those people through those moments, yourself through those moments, and being able to move forward in a positive way. And that's been some of the things that we've watched La Russa do, like he had done for 33 years before this. Unfortunately, it had been 10 years in between the time he did it in 2011 and now with the White Sox in 2021 that he had to make these decisions and communicate with players again.
Yep, no question about it, Bruce. But and as you said, though, having Craig Kimball and trying to slot him into a bullpen that already features Hendricks, that is a good problem to have. You know, speaking of good, right, and we mentioned Yasmani Grandal, two homers, a total of four hits and eight RBIs in his return. And Grandal, after the game, talked about the big outburst.
Definitely not surprised. I had a goal that I mentioned to you guys, and I put in the work, and that's pretty much it. I wanted to get back on the field. I knew how important it was for me to get back on the field. So, I was here, 12, 13 hours a day, always doing something, making sure that I was getting all the work that I needed and to be able to go to a minor league rehab and be able to do what I needed to do down there so that I can get back up here.
And Bruce, you talk about Grandal and, the batting average. Actually, after last night, the batting average just finally crept over 200 for the season. But he was a guy who, average be darned. He was getting on base. His OPS is almost 900. He was hitting home runs and driving in runs before he's got hurt. So for all the press and the publicity that some of the stars of the White Sox get, Grandal is kind of one of those under the radar guys, but he's a guy who has been a key cog for this lineup throughout the season.
I think, Mike, he's the most important offensive player and in some ways defensive too, because of going back behind the plate along with Zavala right now. Unfortunately, meant that Collins had to go back to the minor leagues after being with the team all year. That's an unfortunate part of the success and Grandal coming back from the injury. But even though he's a switch hitter, Grandal's left-handed bat with all the right-handed hitters in the Chicago White Sox lineup, I think is a key to an awful lot of success in the postseason. I just think that they keep him healthy. He fits in the middle of the order somewhere, breaks up those right-handed hitters that are significantly outstanding, if not working toward being a great group of right-handed hitters. And you could probably put Abreu into that already, Jimenez on the cusp of that. You're going to get pitched to by the best pitchers and the best staffs in baseball. And when you have the left-handed bat of Grandal and hopefully Moncada, moving toward being more like Moncada of the 2019 version rather than the 2021, that is going to be significant as to how many runs you can score, how deep you might be able to go in the postseason.
Yep, no question about it, Bruce. And Abreu, you mentioned, and, Mr. Consistency sitting there batting third every night. He's got 99 RBIs now on the season after last night. You talk about a run producer. He is certainly that in a very high-scoring offense. Jimenez has been awesome since coming off of the injured list. Grandal, not a bad comeback for him last night. I mean, that's about as good as you can get. So certainly offensively, the Sox heating up. And we saw the importance of Tim Anderson when he missed those few games earlier this week. And Tony La Russa actually talked about it. Having him as that spark atop the lineup, it's a big deal for them.
As Anderson goes, so go the White Sox offense. He is that important of a player. Getting the energy going, getting those at-bats going. He is unconventional in the way he performs on offense, on defense, the way he moves to a different beat of a different drummer. But he's one of the best players in the game, and he is certainly a big part of the lifeblood of the Chicago White Sox. There's just no question about it. We'll continue more. Talk White Sox, Cubs, everything you want in Chicago baseball. Our number is 244-6767. He's Mike. I'm Bruce. We'll hear from you for you every week on Saturday, talking on Inside the Clubhouse from 9 to 11. Mike, take it away. We'll be talking to John Shambi coming back.
Yeah, Boog will join us around 9:30. And as Bruce said, we will talk Cubs and Sox, both sides of this rivalry. We have more tape to play you from the Cubs side. We will do that in a bit. But when we return, more Crosstown Talk with Boog Sciambi on Inside the Clubhouse here on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And we have the podcast Office Ladies. Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories and lots of laughs.
Follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Glover last year. Plus the bat. Drilled to center. Hermosillo back. Back some more. Reaches up. Hermosillo. Oh, baby, what a catch. Wow. That is a heck of a play.
And that, the voice of our next guest on last night's game, circus catch by Michael Hermosillo, as heard on Marquee Sports Network. Cubs, though, lose the White Sox 17-13 in the first game of this weekend's Crosstown Classic. Bruce, we now head out to the Score Hotline, sponsored by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book.
Yeah, that's right, Mike, and we bring in the voice of Cub baseball on the Marquee Sports Network. Our good friend John Boog Sciambi joins us for a little chat here today. Boog, how do you get your head around 30 runs yesterday? How do you walk out of there without being a little shook up from the offensive explosion on both sides?
Yeah, it was amazing, wasn't it? It was. It was a lot, and I mean, for the Cubs, it felt a lot like that game in Milwaukee earlier in the year where they scored 7 in the first and lost 15-7. Yeah. Look, this is a White Sox team that can really score. I think you sort of break it all down into pieces. And, you know, one of the things that I think about is, you know, Patrick Wisdom continues to show that the power is real. I mean, you're talking about a guy who's been one of the premier power hitters in the game since the end of May. So there's that part of it. But, you know, the White Sox can get you in a number of different ways. Obviously, the big night was Grandal, and I think he's a pretty important piece for them because they are pretty right-handed, you know, when you look at their lineup. So I feel like, you know, to give them a little bit of balance. I don't think it's a huge deal, but I think ideally you'd like to have, you know, some of that balance and somebody from the left side, or, you know, in this case, a switch hitter, but somebody from the left side who's feared a bit. So, but it was a lot, man, and it was a lot.
Well, and Boog, you mentioned Wisdom, and I just noticed during the break there on Twitter, your teammate at Marquee, Tony Andracki, projects out Wisdom on a 162-game pace for 46 homers, and it's like, holy cow. I mean, you know he's hitting for power. We've been watching the games, but, you know, seeing it down on paper based off of a full season, that is, as you said, that's elite power.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, again, you'd like to see the strikeout rate down, but, I mean, and I'm not saying – I think the better chance is to bring the strikeout rate down – because, you know, when you're striking out 39% of your plate appearances, you know, that's going to lead the majors. That's too high. But, you know, if it is going to come in the package of 46 homers, then you still probably can be out there a good amount, because that's, again, that's big-time power. So we'll see. But I think it's pretty neat for a guy who just turned 30 yesterday to be getting this opportunity and to make the most of it the way he has.
Boog Sciambi joins us on Inside the Clubhouse. We're here for you every Saturday, 52 weeks out of the year, talking baseball. David Haw taking a break this week. Mike Esposito sitting in. Boog, that leads us to 2022 and beyond. I know we have 30-some games left in 2021, but looking at the Chicago Cubs going forward, you know, I've been an observer of the team and reporting on it for almost 40 years. I don't have a sense of where it's going to be in spring training or the beginning of next year. Give me some thoughts about where do you think this team might be going forward from what you've seen and what you hear.
Well, I think there's sort of two things to keep in mind. I will say that the part of it that I'm probably most interested in is, you know, 23 is probably when, you know, you would expect it to get a little more interesting. And I'm curious, are we watching anybody on this team that's going to be part of the next really good to great Cubs team? That's one of the questions I have, and I'm not sure. As far as next year, it's pretty clear Rafael Ortega is a major league player and a guy that, if there's a right-handed pitcher on the mound, is capable of being in a lineup, I think probably in a corner outfield spot. But I think he's, you know, he's shown value. And then, you know, Hermosillo makes the catch. He hits, you know, the homer. He's a guy at 26 that's toolsy. You know, it's pretty wild. He's played in parts now of four seasons. He doesn't even have 150 big league plate appearances. So he has not gotten an opportunity, and he's got big tools. I mean, he's a guy that you're really interested in seeing, okay, so what is this? And then I think Ian Happ is another one that you're sitting there saying, okay, you'd like him to finish strong. You know he has shown the ability to be a very good major league hitter. You know, you'd like him to finish strong so that he sort of cements his place to begin next year. But, you know, I made this point yesterday. But then next year he also is going to need to start in a manner. I'm not saying, you know, go crazy, but he's got to start in a manner that's more consistent with, you know, what his career line is and what he's capable of.
Yeah, Boog, I think for me anyway, Happ is the biggest head scratcher, right? Because last year when they won the division, Happ is one of your key offensive players. And as Bruce and I were talking about in the first segment of the show, you know, after last night, and you know, another good night, you know, he's put a string of them together here in August, but you know, he's just finally climbing over 200 for the season. He has been hitting lately. He did hit his 16th home run yesterday. But to go from key offensive player last year to really struggling this year, and that's kind of been the story of his Cubs career. It's very maddening, I think, is the word.
It's been up and down. There's no doubt. I mean, again, I think the one thing I would say, look, he's 27. This is about the time where you expect, you know, it to settle in. I mean, look, I mean, Bruce, you've been covering this a lot longer than I have, but I think the one thing that we're all always guilty of is that we always assume that when you take guys that scouts and teams have put the label on as they have promise, they have talent, and then you wait to watch them develop, we always, always get tricked into thinking that the progression is going to be linear. So that,
right,
if guy that we say is going to be good hits 20 homers and looks pretty good, well, then the next year he should hit 23, and then the next year he should hit 26, and then the next year he should hit 30. It doesn't necessarily happen that way. Sometimes it's 20 to 14 to 12 to 30, and they can become the player that everybody thinks they were going to be, but it's not in that just linear type progression. So I think, again, it's, you know, a guy that comes to mind for me that Cub fans are more than familiar with is Derek Lee. You know, Derek Lee, when he was in Miami, when I was down there, man, there were some ups and downs. And, you know, you guys saw Derek Lee turn into, for a stretch, one of the better players in the league. So I just think, you know, there's still time left for Ian Happ to show what he's capable of. It's frustrating for him. I know it's frustrating, you know, for us at times to watch. But, you know, again, I think you just kind of got to be patient with that.
John Boog-Shambi, nice enough to take some time on a Saturday morning to talk to us and Inside the Clubhouse. And, Boog, when you look at your job and coming to Chicago and feeling a part of Chicago, getting used to living in the city during the summer, continuing on with your ESPN job, how have things gone for you? Obviously, you've seen the tale of two different teams with the Chicago Cubs so far, just like David Ross has, your good buddy. But how have you felt segue into being the main broadcaster for Cub baseball?
You know, it's funny. In all the years that I was coming here, I always appreciated it because there was such great passion. But I don't think I ever contemplated or, you know, Len was the voice for 16 years and we would talk about it. But I don't know that I ever really asked him what it was like in doing the job as the voice. And I think it's been really cool to try to, you know, every day be a little more part of the community and meeting people and just look, there's an importance to it, which I just love how much people care, you know, even in moments this season, which over the, you know, since 2015, there's been a lot of success. And this year has been outside, you know, that stretch. So you're talking about even with, you know, the lack of success at times, a fan base that's so special and passionate. I feel really lucky to be part of it. And as far as Chicago, yeah, just I love the city. The people have been wonderful. And it's felt like home kind of for, you know, from the start. And I'm a New York kid and it's always felt very familiar to me and it's really been enjoyable and getting to, you know, that the office is Wrigley Field is pretty neat.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Booga, we talked about Craig Kimbrell earlier in the show, and, you know, he gave up that home run to Hap last night. He's struggled a bit since coming to the White Sox. Now, you saw him absolutely dominate National League hitters in the first half of the season to the point where I think statistically he was the best relief pitcher in the game in the first half of the season. What do you make of the whole eighth inning, ninth inning? You know, does that have something to do with how he's performing and really the transition, even though, and he even said it, he didn't have to move. He's still in Chicago. Different team, different clubhouse. How do you put all that together for Kimbrell on the White Sox?
I don't know what to tell you. I mean, like, look, he basically hadn't given up a run, an earned run in the ninth inning before last night. So, that's kind of hard to sustain. I'd also say this, like, in my opinion, if you were doing it, an evaluation, I think Craig probably should be the closer, and that's no disrespect towards, I mean, based on what has taken place this year on track record. But that said, I think it's just something guys got to get used to. You know, like I talk about that, you know, that closer centric model. You got to get out so that it's not like you just need good dudes down there. And so I don't know whether that's an issue for him, but, you know, I want as many guys that profile as high strikeout, you know, low to average walk rate as possible. That are hard to hit, and they have two great ones. So I don't know what to tell you. There's got to be something real to it. I, you know, as much as, you know, I like it when the managers go and you know, don't necessarily use their closer. They use their closer, you know, in the highest leverage spot, you know, as opposed to the save-centric type closing. But I think that Craig Kimbrell will end up being an asset for them. You know, again, in these small little sample bursts, weird stuff can happen. I don't know what to tell you. I mean, again, if it bothers some guys, then it bothers them. But at some juncture, you just gotta, your job is the same regardless, and that's to get out. So that's what you gotta do. I don't know how you fix that one or solve that one. I think that, you know, I would love to have a bullpen of, you know, eight elite level closers, and then you have that problem. I would hope that you could figure it out. You know what I mean?
Before you take off, Boog, and again, Mike and I, thank you so much for joining us today. Give us a little bit about where Project Main Street is right now and the fight against ALS.
I appreciate it, pal. You know, it's funny. We're looking towards October, and we are doing an event, and fundraising effort just to help people living with the disease. That's the focus of our charity. And then, you know, we start to plan, honestly, for, you know, next year, Lou Gehrig Day again. But it's, yeah, Project Main Street, mainst.org. And every dollar goes to help somebody that's living with the disease. The average out-of-pocket cost for a patient with ALS is $250,000. So we try and help and honor my friend Tim Sheehy. And, yeah, that's what we've been doing since 2006. So I appreciate you letting me get that in there.
Absolutely, Boog. And thanks for the time and friendship. It's been great to have you around all year round, and look forward to seeing you out at the ballpark today. Thanks again for joining us.
My pleasure, Bruce. Mike, thanks.
That's Boog Sciambi. Thank you, Boog, from Cubs TV, Marquee Sports Network. Bruce, and great to hear about the charity work that he's doing there, and props to you for letting him mention that as well. But certainly lots going on with the Cubs, and, you know, we didn't even really get to pitching, but we're going to get to pitching next, I think, and talk a little bit about Keegan Thompson and some of the other Cubs starting pitchers and where they may fit in going forward. And then, of course, we have Cubs TV. We have to have Sox TV, right? Jason Benetti will join us at the top of the next hour.
Looking forward to it. And, again, our number is 312-644-6767. Open phone lines for you to join us next. This is Inside the Clubhouse on 670thescore.com.
Very poor. You know, with a six-run lead, it's unacceptable to go out there, not be able to throw strikes. No excuse. I think it was last hit the tone from the beginning on the mound for us tonight, and just a long night.
That was last night's starting pitcher for the Cubs, Keegan Thompson, who staked a 6-0 lead, as he mentioned, and then proceeded to last only two innings, giving up five runs for them earned. This is Inside the Clubhouse right here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score, alongside Bruce Levine, Mike Esposito in for David Haw today. Glad to be pinch hitting, as always. And Bruce Thompson, one of those guys that if you're looking for things to watch for the Cubs, in the last, you know, 5 or 6 weeks here of the season, heading into 2022, he is one of those guys, right? Starting pitching is a huge need. He's one of those guys with upside. Last night, not his best.
Right, and the young pitching, as you identified, Mike, is definitely what you want to look at. You want to get to Alzolay, certainly coming off of the IL, and make a few more starts before the season's over with. You want to give Steele all the opportunity to expand out and start games and, you know, work his way up to 75, 80 pitches. You don't have to necessarily make it 100, but just, you know, get out there for five innings and get your feet wet as a starter, just like Thompson. So that's really the main emphasis for me, if you're watching Cub baseball the rest of the year, is the development of the younger pitchers. And then making decisions, you have Mills, who's pitching tonight under contract control still for next year. He's been a very valuable pitcher and a very selfless one who will go anywhere and do anything for you and pitch well. Trying to get the peripheral guys. Do you want to assign Davies to an extension just because he's a professional pitcher? Will go out there and give you a professional effort all the way. To go along with Hendricks, who's going to lead the staff. There are a lot of question marks, but getting those young pitchers moving as starting pitchers, I think that's the key for them moving forward here this next month.
No doubt. And Bruce, a lot of text coming in, and our text line brought to you by Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin. Save time and shop online at rosenhyundai.com. 312-644-6767 is our phone number, also the text line. And the texter adroitly points out that the development of the pitching, and we've heard Jed talk about this, the development of pitching has really been their Achilles heel. This texter goes back to Zimbrano, Wood, and Pryor being the last pitchers that the Cubs developed in their farm system. And I'm racking my brain here, and Hendricks came over in a trade. It's been a while.
Well, I mean, I think you have to give the Cubs some credit because Hendricks came over in a trade, but he was basically developed in the farm system. He was the pitcher of the year in their minor league system in 2013 before he was pushed up to the major leagues in 2014. Okay. So they have to get credit for it. They get some credit for developing Contreras and for Baez, even though they were signed by Jim Hendry's people and O'Neary Flito, who was the developmental guy and the head of the minor leagues for Baez and Contreras. But the Cubs' present people, you know, including Jason McLeod and Jed Hoyer, they have to get credit for developing these people too, because they were in the system. So you're right. We talk an awful lot about the fact of what the texter said, that they haven't developed starting pitching since back in the early 2000s as far as real viable guys. But it's not like they were standing still. They still get some credit for some of these guys making it here. And hopefully, when you're looking at the steals and you're looking at the Thompsons and you're looking at the Alzolays, you're going to see the next breed of solid starting pitchers coming up the chain for the Cubs.
No doubt about it. And obviously, Theo and Jed were concentrating, and they strategized to take hitters up high, and we saw that team win a World Series. So no doubt about it, and we'll get back to the Cubs in a second, Bruce. But when we return, we're going to shift over to the South Side. We talked to Boog. We have to talk to Jason Benetti. White Sox TV play-by-play man Jason Benetti is our guest next here on Inside the Clubhouse on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Listeners, I want to tell you about a new podcast from Odyssey called Family Lore, where people tell interesting stories about their family history, and then we investigate the truth behind them. Family Lore is available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.